The debate to change the Army's force structure is switching focus from should they do it to how will they do it. One strategy Congress is proposing is a commission on the structure of the Army. Frank Hoffman's a senior research fellow at the Institute for Strategic Studies at the National Defense University, and he's writing about the idea for such a commission on the Defense in Depth blog at the Council on Foreign Relations. Frank, it's great to talk to you as always. Thank you for coming on the program this afternoon. This is a bad idea in your view. What are the reasons that you think that this is something that shouldn't happen, Frank?
Well, there's at least three right now. The first of which is I think the guards already had their day in court if we're looking at this as a way of defending the guard from cuts, which I think is one of the things that's motivating this. General Grass, who represents the Guard Bureau, has been promoted to four-star rank, has a very effective staff, and has been a pretty vociferous advocate for the guard inside the system, so I don't know why we need to go outside the system. Secondly, I'm bothered by a little bit about the precedent of this. I think the whole purpose seems to be paralysis rather than moving the ball down the field. And again, particularly with the guard advocate. There are times when you want a commission. I've been on two. I've spent 3 years of my life wrestling with hard issues on roles and missions of the guard or the development of a homeland security structure for the United States. I mean, there's times when you have tough political problems. But we have a plethora of problems right now. And if we end up having a commission on it every time, you know, something in the guard gets touched or when some, you know, parochial interest, a particular type of airplane, an A-10 or a U-2, gets cut when we're taking such severe cuts, you know, we're just going to have a rather large collection of commissions, and all we're doing is kicking the can down the road. And then finally, I'm a little bit concerned about, you know, the politicization of the issue. I think some guard advocates believe that they're really going to get you know, more resources out of a commission rather than less. And I think they're going to be surprised if there is such a commission. I believe it'll be a more independent commission. And it could end up pushing more cuts on the guard than what they're actually getting.
Yeah, it's interesting. The title of your piece is A Commission for the Structure of the Army? Careful what you wish for. And that's usually an admonition that the person asking for something to happen won't like the results that they get. Is that what you think potentially could happen here, Frank?
Well, perhaps. I've written another piece in Parameters at the Army War College, you know, trying to get at a larger issue about the size of the Army. We're taking severe cuts in the Army writ large, and I think what's ultimately going to happen if we have a commission, some issues about the risk that the country's taking, about an over-reliance upon the reserves as a very low cost, which they are, and a reasonably professional force. I think the Guard's a wonderful deal for the country, but we shouldn't overcommit to calling up a lot of Guardsmen and ruining their day-to-day professions as well. So I think the Guard should be somewhat concerned about going outside the system and expecting some commission to increase their size rather than cut their size.
You write, the Guard has just as much to lose in this process as it has to gain, and to get right at the heart of that issue, Frank.
Well, that's just what I think. I think if you look at the numbers that the Army's taking, the active Army's going to cut at least 150,000 full-time people over the next 5 years, and we're only asking the National Guard Bureau to take a much smaller cut. So while the active force is being cut by 25%, General Ordinaro seems to be only asking the Guard to be cut by 5% over the next 5 years. So it's very disproportionately heavy on the active force, and if a commission gets established, I think the imbalance of the cuts. You know, the chief of staff of the Army has striven very hard to protect the Guard as much as he can, and the cuts are disproportionately on the active force because that's where the dollars are. But in fact, I think that the Guard may find out that they won't get a better deal even if it's an independent commission.
How much of this do you think is about resources, Frank, and how much of it do you think is about culture? Because my sense is, from hearing these arguments and from having various voices on all sides of this on this program, my sense is that there's certainly an element of culture here, that there is maybe suspicion is too strong of a word or too conspiratorial of a word, but there is some unease between the reserve or the National Guard and reserve component of the Army and the active duty component of the Army.
Yeah, there's a little bit of I think culture maybe is a little bit too nice. It's a bias I'm a retired reservist. I spent most of my career in the reserves and have served on in reserve units and been called up. And I know we're sometimes looked down upon as weekend warriors. And I think the guardsmen, push back on that because they know what they can bring to the table as a very efficient part of our national security architecture. So I think some of this is just the perspectives of the two communities, the full-timers who like to think of themselves as the pros, and then the guardsmen and reserve community as, you know, weekend warriors, and most of us reservists push back on that. And I sense that's what's animating a lot of the guards' perspective. It's a desire for a little bit of respect, which they've earned over the last decade.
Frank Hoffman of the National Defense University, writing on the Defense in Depth blog at the Council on Foreign Relations. His comments are his own, not the position of the Defense Department. Where do you see this argument going? Just because you think that we don't need a commission on the structure of the Army obviously doesn't mean it's not going to happen. Is this something that you think is likely to happen despite your thinking it's not a good idea?
I think something's going to happen, and particularly on the narrow issue of the aviation restructuring plan that the Army has put forward, which would have taken away quite a bit of Army helicopter depth, particularly in the Apache anti-tank helicopter capability, and would have replaced it with all the Black Hawks. Basically, the Army was moving 8 squadrons of Apaches out of the Guard and replacing them with 111 Black Hawks. And to many, you know, guardsmen, that looked like a big decrease in their warfighting capability, and they saw it as a lack of respect for the professionalism they were bringing to the table. It's actually, I think, another good deal for the Guard. It's a good deal for the governors, because the Black Hawks are something you can use both in wartime and peacetime in a domestic thing, and it's just a perfect aircraft, I think, for a dual-use military, which is what our Guard is. They have state and homeland security requirements, and they have overseas requirements, and the Black Hawks is a more flexible platform, far less expensive, far more useful for many, many missions that I think governors will like to have. You can't use the anti-armor capability of the Black Hawk in a domestic capability, so I just think that the Guard's looking a potentially good deal in the wrong way because of a bias about what the active force is really trying to do. I think it's a misunderstanding.
Those thoughts take me in two different directions, Frank. First of all, they take me back to what I mentioned earlier about this being a cultural issue, because that sounds like more a case of this is our stuff and we don't want you to take it away, even if the stuff that you're going to give us in exchange for it is better for our actual mission. It also takes me to the broader point of looking at some document, whether it's the QDR or something else, and saying, what exactly do we want all of our people resources to be able to do, and then what equipment's required for them to be able to do that? And if we think about the Guard as a dual-use capability, as you just alluded to a moment ago, then maybe it doesn't sound like people have been thinking about them the right way for a while.
Well, this is because during the Cold War and, 9/11 still considered an anomaly. And in many cases, the Guards viewed its resources, its prestige, its recruiting capacity, and its professionalism tied to a warfighting function. And we shouldn't belittle that. We actually do need a very efficient warfighting Guard. Just when we get down to specific capabilities, you know, along a certain timeline, how much resources you have and how you want to phase those capabilities over time, since you're going to have active forces ready and forward deployed. And at least for the first 60 days of a war, you're going to have some reliance upon the active force. And then as you mobilize the reserves and bring things online and get people ready to go, somewhere in the first 3, 4, and 5 months of a major war, you're going to have more and more access to reserve capabilities. Some of those capabilities should be front-loaded in the active force, and you're going to have to keep some of them in the Guard. I would never have probably proposed what the Army had proposed with a complete shift of something going from, 50-50 active and reserve to going entirely in the forward active force. But that was the Army Chief of Staff's call, which he negotiated with the Pentagon, and he briefed it through the building, and he got it through OMB, and it's part of the President's budget now. So I'm ready to salute it and move on. Some people are not. But again, we get to a larger issue of what do we want the Army to do? What do we want the Guard to contribute to that? How much risk we're taking? What the readiness level for that force is? What kind of wars we're expecting? I don't think a standalone commission is just going to be able to look at the Army and the Guard alone and answer all those questions.
Well, you anticipated exactly where I was going to go next. When you take it to the level that you just described a moment ago, then it becomes, it seems to me, should become a really comprehensive look at what the entire military operation is expected to be able to execute.
And I believe the department just did that
right
with the QDR. And that what you see in the budget is a reflection of a thought process, the war plans, the risk, the readiness trade-offs, and the hard calls that the chief tried to make, that he got through the chairman, that he got through the Department of Defense, and that he got through the White House. So it's been scrubbed a few times. It's not pleasant. Nobody wants to make any of the cuts and some of the shifts. There'd be a great deal of turbulence in these reserve and guard aviation units if they switch from one type of aircraft to another. In the long run, they might be better off, but in the near term, it'd be an awful lot of turbulence and a readiness degradation in all those units as they convert. And that's problematic, and I know the Guard's aware of that, and that's one of their concerns.
Frank, always enjoyed talking to you. It's great to have you on the program today.
Thanks again, Francis.